Welcome back to Your New Life Blend. I'm Shoshana Hecht, and I'm so excited to be joined today by Taylor Lorenz, technology journalist and author of the new book, Extremely Online, The Untold Story of Fame, Influence, and Power on the Internet. Taylor has been an absolute leader in covering the evolution of social media and the content creator industry, and has broken countless front page stories helping to explain the latest in digital culture, who's using it and often creating it in real time, and how it is often a harbinger of how we'll all eventually be living our lives. She is currently a technology columnist for The Washington Post and was previously at The New York Times, The Atlantic, The Daily Beast, and many more. She is an internationally sought-after expert in all things online and frequently appears on NBC, CNN, CBS, and the BBC, as well as in documentaries on Netflix, Hulu, and HBO, plus all the fancy ideas festivals, where it's safe to say the powers that be were probably not OGs on TikTok. Taylor has been an OG everywhere, and her new book tells the history of social media, centering its users from mommy bloggers, Viners, YouTubers, TikTokers, and all the influencers in between, and how they've changed the game for all of us individually, but also how we interact as a society, and certainly as we're seeing now globally. We are so lucky to have her here today. Welcome to the show, Taylor.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. I'm super excited for this conversation. I want to start with the book because it's easy to look at a finished book and say, well, this is obviously the book you were meant to write. But you've been so deep in all of these stories for so long, and they're filled with rabbit holes and twists and turns. And I actually marvel at how you're able to pull yourself away from all that shiny internet objects and find the big picture. I know you originally wrote like 60,000 words. I saw that somewhere, 60,000 words initially on Vine alone. So I love how you decided that this very ambitious project was going to be the book.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to write a kind of alternative history of the rise of social media that included a lot of people that I felt like had been overlooked, in kind of the way I feel like a lot of these tech books don't address the whole content creator industry and the user side of the platforms.
And so gave us this big retrospective about all, I mean, it is really fascinating, I say, for anybody who hasn't read the book, and I'm just burning my way through it, just the evolution of where we've come from. I mean, thinking about mommy bloggers and how, you know,
dismissed.
Yes, thank you. That is the word I was looking for. How dismissed they were, but how they wrested control back from gatekeepers. I don't know if you see it that way.
Yeah, no, definitely. They were such pioneers in so many ways, and I feel like have never really gotten their due because a lot of Silicon Valley has just sort of written these people out of the picture.
I love how your book really speaks to, like, I think the larger theme of your book, which is power, right? So do you want to speak to that a little bit about just that overarching theme?
So much of the power that social media platforms have, or the internet has, really is from the people who use it to generate attention or money or change things. The book is about the rise of the content creator industry extensively, but it's also about just like how these users have shaped these big platforms as well, like power users, I would say, content creators, influencers, whatever you want to call them, the impact that they've had on the tech landscape, and also just how they built this $500 billion industry from nothing. And I would argue transformed the media landscape. I think a lot of people thought that digital media would be like BuzzFeed and Vox and things like that. And I think this is the actual digital media landscape that we should be paying attention to.
There's so many ways to go with that. I just think social media was kind of like a joke, right? Thought of as nothing. And it's like new media or digital media or whatever. It was just like nothing to pay attention to. But now it really is shaping so much of what we're thinking about, and is shaped by people who are not maybe seeking legitimacy from mainstream media. I mean, is that accurate?
I think that it's just constantly dismissed, like you said, as a joke or silly. And when I first started writing about YouTubers, I remember people were like, oh, she wants to write about, you know, the site for cat videos or whatever. Do you remember people used to like dismiss YouTube so much? It's always been treated as kind of a silly secondary thing by a lot of people. I don't know what's going on. I think people that are paying attention, and mostly almost all young people, don't see it that way. But I think there's just a dismissiveness from a lot of people in sort of like legacy power systems.
But people who are dismissed really really, I mean, I think we're seeking ways to make money, right? Talking about power and what goes along with that is money, right?
Yeah, eventually, right? Eventually the money came. I think initially the early mommy bloggers, they didn't even realize the economic opportunities. It was more about venting and changing, you know, people's views of motherhood. And then of course the money came. Now it's a very, very, very like hyper-capitalist like landscape where it's really kind of dystopian. It's so much about money. But yeah, I mean, there's still just so much opportunity on the internet, I think.
I've seen those comments where people are like, everybody remember, like, these platforms are about selling to you, right?
Well, they're about selling your data, that's for sure. Yeah, everything you do is about making money for them, for sure.
For the platform.
Yes, and they will do anything to profit. They will alienate their users a lot of times. They will make bad decisions. They will platform harmful content. They'll do any of that if it's going to help them profit.
That's jarring, actually. Chilling in this moment. Something that's on my mind a lot is I am Jewish and there's a war around the world and all the different ways that social media, I think, is being weaponized. And that really drives it home. There's a drive to have it be that almost doesn't matter what the content is getting. That's what you're saying.
Well, the war has been so fraught for these platforms because they fundamentally don't want news on them. So you see threads censoring things. I saw yesterday there was news that Instagram was changing the bios of people with the word Palestinian or Palestine in their bio to terrorist on the translate feature.
Wow.
Yeah, there's just a lot of problems with relying on social media platforms for our news and information because the moderation on a lot of them is out of control. And then, of course, you have, yeah, I mean, you just have very heavy-handed moderation, I think, and which makes it hard for journalists to communicate news and information. And then in other ways, they're not moderating enough where they have like gore videos, right? They're very irresponsible.
That's a confirmed thing. Like, you just blew my mind a little bit. That's a confirmed thing, like in the translation. They're making
these. Oh, yeah. They admitted it and said it was an error. But yeah, it was a thing that they were doing. I think it's an example of how irresponsible these tech platforms are.
Which is not something you're necessarily speaking to in the book, right? But it's something you write about a lot, I think, right?
Yeah, I think there's been literally hundreds, if not thousands at this point, books written about those topics. I think all that stuff is important, but I think that you can't understand the internet landscape and you can't truly critique these platforms if all you're writing about is like election disinformation and, you know, all this bad stuff. There's also this whole media industry. And I wanted to write about that media industry that's built on the back of these platforms so people can understand it. Because it's not enough to just log off. That's what the solution is in a lot of these other books. It's like, everyone log off more. And it's like, well, no, we shouldn't have a less connected world, in my opinion. We should just push these platforms to do better and understand that this is also our media ecosystem now. And content creators are important and I think play an important role in disseminating information. But we do need to push the tech platforms to be better.
That's interesting because, I mean, I think the through line is the user-driven evolution of the landscape. How do the users then engage with the platforms to make them be better?
Not always better, but certainly different. And I say users, I mean power users. I mean influencers. I mean content creators. The people that are generating the massive amount of engagement on these apps. And I talk about the things that they've asked for over the years, and sometimes they've gotten them, sometimes they've not gotten them. Vine famously sort of had this hostile relationship with his content creators. The book is about how everybody in tech has pretty much spent the past 25 years ignoring emerged. And I mean tech like Silicon Valley people.
Talked about a lot of things, but specifically about Twitter letting content creators monetize and dropping the ball there, right? Almost feels like no moderation or lack of.
Now there's so much moderation. It's so heavy-handed. They're restricting replies to people's tweets. They're blocking, like, it's the most heavy-handed moderation, but not for a specific group of people. And there's no one that's more pro-moderation and anti-free speech than Elon, but he allows this group of extreme far-right content creators, he allows them to operate with impunity on the website while everyone else's speech is heavily moderated and heavily restricted. I mean, I say this as somebody that was banned from Twitter right after I asked Elon for comment. Yeah, it's extremely restrictive.
So for me, it feels there's a lack of a reliable moderation, but it just depends on your perspective, right? What does reliable mean to you?
I think any sense of reliable is not reliable in any sense of the word. Yeah. He's catering to a very specific ideology.
Right. That's the point I was trying to make, where it's like, if you're in the can for that, if that's what you're after, then it's reliable for you. But broadly, not.
I wouldn't even say reliable. It's catering directly to the far right. Mm-hmm. So it's boosting the far right and catering to them. But then, of course, you get on the outs with him, even if you have that ideology, and he will punish you. I mean, look at what he did to that account, Cat Turd, that was like his number one fan and pushing far right nonsense and then sort of got on Elon's bad side and is now restricted like everyone else.
Oh, gosh. What else to say about Twitter and X? My God.
It's just such a disaster. And it's such a loss. pass. The one thing that is the silver lining of it is I do think it's forced a lot of people in news to look outside of the platform and experiment and engage with the broader internet, which was a big problem because previously everyone in news was so addicted to Twitter, and I think they really ignored all the other platforms.
I've heard you talk about just really enjoying different ways of telling stories and using the different platforms to do that. And now it's really maybe pressing other journalists to engage with the users and the audience in different ways, which I think is interesting because it also helps really integrate and maybe deepen even critical thinking if you have to find different ways to tell your point of view or to tell a story.
Yeah.
Segueing your view about women generally, would you say it's fair that women drove the real surge of moving the landscape towards content creators, influencers being the power users?
Yeah, definitely. I think women built the whole influencer industry, content creator industry. It's an industry built and dominated by women. I think that's why it was dismissed for so long, because people didn't take it seriously and they talked about it as, oh, these like vapid girls taking selfies and they're narcissistic and all this stuff, and refusing to understand these fundamental shifts in media and how this industry was evolving. So many of the early pioneers were women, from the mommy bloggers to a lot of these MySpace stars to some of the earlier people on YouTube, beauty vloggers. It's just an industry that's very female dominated.
Because they could get paid, right? Because there were gatekeepers for women and women's labor.
I think for so many reasons. I mean, initially they weren't getting paid. Initially it was about self-expression. Ultimately, they did monetize their media companies. They are still paid significantly less than men when men are in the industry. But yeah, they did definitely chart sort of new revenue pathways and built successful media brands. But a lot of it wasn't about the money for a lot of women. It was really about meeting unmet needs. I talked to Ingrid Nielsen a lot for my book, who's a beauty vlogger, and she spoke a lot about the makeup industry and how it didn't cater towards women of color, and how that's why a lot of early makeup tutorials blew up, was women producing content that addressed these niches that traditional media didn't address. And you saw that with blogging, obviously, you saw that with all forms of media.
That's right. You wrote about that a lot in the book, which is two things that you're just making me think about, which was the blowback that women got when there was a place to vent and people rely on it as a source of whatever comfort or being seen or togetherness. But then when it was like basically a full-time job in addition to whatever other work they were doing, and then trying to figure out how to get paid, there was blowback on that. And then also ways for women and other disenfranchised groups to be seen and build community, right, where they'd been boxed out before. And I think the makeup tutorial is a perfect, beautiful example of that. That really struck me in the book too. It's just one example of many. Thank you for sharing that. That's really important. So learnings for you on the journey. How is putting this all together? Because you have seen and written and broken a lot of news, as we said, powerful writer of technology, you know, deep understanding of all the interconnectedness, your own learnings, or how has it changed for you along the way?
The internet has changed, I think, all of our relationships with like technology has changed so much over the past, like, you know, several decades. Definitely, I have a different relationship with the internet, I think, now than I did 10 years ago, as does everyone, because we've seen sort of the harms that can come from it, and we've seen it evolve. And I really didn't want to put my own experiences in the book because I wanted people to put themselves in each time frame and be like, oh, I remember that, or oh, yeah. And so, yeah, obviously, I used all the platforms pretty much that I talked about in the book, but not MySpace. Actually, I never had a MySpace. But yeah, it's changed a lot.
It has changed a lot. Actually, that didn't occur to me, but you can see yourself in your own relationship to it. Like, Taylor, you did a great job with that, because I didn't notice you were not in the story, but because your voice is so strong, it's so sourced, and you're such an expert, you really do create a lot of space for the reader to like just be like, oh yeah, right. Oh, I remember that.
That's how I wanted people to feel when they were reading.
So just looking at this from your new life blend, where we talk about, you know, what happens to us, how we integrate it, how we design a life with intention. How do you think all of this actually has impacted that, changed our ability? Comparison culture is something I talk about a lot. And as it relates to social media and my coaching, how do you feel it's impacted our lives?
How has social media done that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I think you could write books on that. I think it's been really liberatory and incredible and amazing in ways, but it's also had severe downsides. And I talk about both in the book. And I think it's about the relationship that you have to the internet too, and how sort of deeply you kind of like manage those boundaries with it. I think a lot of people don't have good boundaries around the internet. I'm totally guilty of myself sometimes, yeah. But it makes it harder.
I mean, they're designed to get us relaunching the apps, right? It's like all gamified. How addicted can it be? And I think, you know, I always say that our boundaries will save our lives, because I think that's true, right? It's like, how do you create your own systems and structures in relationship to it so that you can have those limits. It's so woven into everything. And like the whole idea of, I think I've said this before, where it's like when Threads came out and everyone was jumping on the Threads thing. And I was like, this is great. Early adopter on Threads. I've never been an early adopter. I personally have never been an early adopter, unlike you, or any kind of OG on social media at all. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'll get right in this. It'll be super great. Whatever. It'll be fun. It'll be interesting. It'll be whatever it'll be. And the very next morning, I was like, ugh, I want to quit it all, except for like LinkedIn. That urge does come up a lot to just log off. And I think for better or for worse, like there is no perma logging off. It's not even just it's here, it's woven, it's the fabric. So tips for us, for our kids, how do we help with thoughts about boundaries, thoughts about ways to maybe healthfully engage with it all?
You have to have a very strong sense of self to survive on the internet these days. And I think that's why it's so sort of hard for kids too, because a lot of kids are sort of just forming their identity when they get online. And so it can really kind of shape their perception of themselves. And that can be really harmful, I think, and dangerous, but it can also bring a lot of good things. I think social media, the landscape for social media for children is like very fraught.
And there's some platforms, like some execs who won't even let their own kids use the platform that allows children.
Well, I think these tech executives know better than anyone else how these platforms manipulate people and kind of seek to just harvest their data and information and, you know, how they do that to children. And I think they don't want their kids buying into that system. And I totally, totally understand.
I do too. But it also feels a little bit like at odds with the like, don't, you know, logging off's not possible, but also, you know, there's the conflict in that, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's good to keep kids off social media as much as possible, honestly, as a rule, because I think, again, they're developing their sense of self and it can warp that a lot. A lot of adults also use social media in an unhealthy way. So I don't think it's like something limited to age, but you know, it depends on how you're using it. And are you using these platforms to be creative and produce videos and express yourself and use it in like a really positive way? Or are you using it in a negative way? And are you having negative experiences on it? You know, technology is like any tool and it can be used for good or bad. And it's about being responsible, I think.
So what does it mean to you to use social media in a healthy way? What does that look like? I'm thinking about disinformation, weaponization, the whiplash of it all. I could go down a whole list. Like,
yeah, the disinformation thing, I think, is not a social media problem. I think it's a broader media literacy problem. And I think in a lot of ways, people are more informed today than ever. I have seen the flaws of traditional media. I've completely lost faith in a lot of traditional media. And I don't think that if you just read traditional media, you're going to be well informed at all. Good that people are getting their news from these sort of alternative news sources. I think it's just a crisis in the US outside of tech. I think it's good to restrict what you put online. Like, I certainly think that the less personal information you put on the internet, the better, because I think it's going to be used against you at some point in your life, probably. And it's better to just keep that offline. So I'm a big fan of deleting old content, using pseudonyms, not putting your whole identity onto the internet.
That's really helpful and important. Circling back to media literacy, like given that so much of that we have to do individually, I mean, I would love for you to speak to how we can do that for ourselves and with loved ones and our kids and whatever family, if we don't have kids.
How to have better media literacy?
Yeah.
I think it's about finding trusted sources of news and information and getting that from trusted sources. Of course, a lot of people don't know what a trusted source is, but that's the whole problem. And, you know, there's many ways to evaluate that, but are they informed and knowledgeable about the issues? If it was as easy as just saying like, well, here, just look for these three things or something, that would be great. But that's just about being knowledgeable on different topics and kind of understanding that corporate power, there's a lot of corporate interests in the US and everywhere, but like in keeping the public uninformed. And the corporate media is very beholden to corporate interests and legacy media is very beholden to corporate power and political power. And so I think it's really important to seek news and information outside the corporate media. But that said, that doesn't mean that it's inherently more reliable to get your news from like a TikTok or something, but I think it's about determining who's reliable.
Yeah, that sort of reinforces my approach, which is to tune into a range of voices that aren't saying the same thing and discerning intersections and conflicts and going a little deeper there. That's sort of my approach, which is trying to stay out of the silo that I think the algo wants to put me into.
Also listening to people that don't have institutional power, like women, people of color, like marginalized groups, that's who you should be listening to, not some corporate media entity that's just reprinting what powerful people say. There's a lot of great journalism. Obviously, I work in traditional media. Like, there's so many great traditional media journalists, but I think it's more about finding specific journalists at an outlet rather than just blindly trusting an outlet because it has a name on it.
I completely agree. Okay, new question. I want to circle back and talk about your own media journey. Your originally marketing side, you know, that all roads led to where you are now and writing this book, this incredible retrospective up to this point. Your originally marketing side, social media strategy, audience growth.
Well, audience was in editorial, but yeah, for my first 2 years, I worked at an ad agency. I was on the creative team and working on social media campaigns for brands. I got into social media through Tumblr. My kind of presence on Tumblr led me to get a bunch of job opportunities and running social for brands and stuff like that. I was also blogging during that time and writing for a lot of smaller blogs. And then there wasn't a full-time like internet culture reporter job that you could really get easily. There was like a couple people doing it, but not really. It was kind of a weird landscape because this was like the turn of it was like 2009 to 2012, I guess I'll talk about. And so yeah, I was writing for these blogs and then I was working at McGarry Bowen, which at the time was like Adweek Ad Age Agency of the Year. It was a big ad agency. And then I decided to get into news because I love the Daily Mail and they didn't have any social media presence. And so I joined the Daily Mail newsroom and started running social media for media brands and writing on the side as on top of it. I would run social media for these media companies and I did some video stuff. I had a Snapchat show. I had multiple Snapchat shows actually. And I did like a bunch of Facebook video stuff. And then I also was writing and yeah, doing social audience development strategy stuff.
But then ultimately switched completely to writing.
Yeah, I switched to writing full time at the end of 2017 because that was just getting really hard to do all of it. I mean, I had my Snapchat stuff. This is when Snapchat was doing a lot of deals with publishers. I was doing at that point producing so much video content because I was in charge of video stuff for the outlet that I was working for at the time. And then I was also writing on top of that a lot. And it was just like, I couldn't do it all. And I also really wanted people to make this a beat. And I felt like, okay, prove to people that this is a viable beat. I just need to quit and take a full-time writing job to like show people that this is a beat that is actually very important. And so, yeah, I did that in 2017. I got a job at the Daily Beast for like nothing, like literally truly entry-level salary.
That was my wondering, like, did the gatekeepers let you? Did they like it? Did they want you to do
it? Well, they kept trying to get me to do social media because I was very good. And I mean, I was very like senior and I was very successful in that realm of media. And so people, I mean, even the Daily Beast, they were like, oh, well, could you do like half social media and half writing? And I was like, that is literally what I've been doing. So like, no. So I just did writing full time for them. But they were like, okay, but since you've never had the job title reporter on your resume, we're going to pay you this entry level thing. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I'm just going to quit the minute that anybody offers me more money, which by the way, is going to happen very soon because I think I'm a good reporter. And that's why I quit after like 6.5 months because The Atlantic offered me more money.
Because you were writing great stuff.
Yeah, my stories were doing really well. And I think they saw the value of my reporting.
First big front page story was?
I think I was on the daily.home page in 2014 because I wrote this story about Instagram. And I definitely have that printed somewhere in my house.
Just to say, and still entry-level reporting salary, even though like 3 years later, you're generating tons of great content all that time. And just because you didn't have the reporter in your title, you got this.
I was always kind of like an internet person. I was a reporter. There was all this like weird discourse in the first half of the 2010s and the late aughts where people didn't consider bloggers journalists. Like people were like, oh, like are digital reporters like real reporters? And so like, I think I internalized a lot of that. And I've always had trouble with writing. I'm not a very good writer. I'm much better sort of like reporter than I am writer. I did call myself like a tech reporter a few times and then people were really mean about it. And so I don't know. I don't really ever know what to call myself. I think now I would just be called a content creator. But back then there wasn't the terminology to really describe me. And so I was just like a social media person. I remember the New York Observer in some article in like 2012 called me a social media gadfly. And I was really mad about it at the time because like everybody else had their name and their like job listed as if they were like these important jobs. I felt like, oh, they don't really know how to call my job. And so they just gave me this silly, I don't know, like people didn't describe me in like a coherent way.
Or a courteous or kind way. You definitely have received an astounding level of negative attention and hate. I've heard you say it doesn't bother you at all.
Yeah, I don't really care about it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm impressed by the not quit, you know, like zero quit. And here we are at the 11th hour where it's just like, oh, Taylor really did design this, like saw the landscape for what the reality of it was and the future and the possibility and where it might be going, and really was like, someone needs to be talking about this. It's me. And I'm going to keep at it until everyone catches up.
Yeah. I didn't even think like, oh, it's me. I think I just thought I'm going to do that because nobody else is doing it. And I felt like it's important. I'm not married to the idea of like me doing it. I wish that other people would do it. And I tried to get editors. I wrote so many memos. Like, I mean, I have dozens of memos. Like I tried to get every single, I've written a memo, I think, for every media organization at this point of trying to get this beat. I mean, there was so much, it's kind of a journey, but yeah. And I wanted other people to, I mean, I would give other reporters stories. I still do that sometimes. Like, I don't care about like me being the one to do it. I just want it to exist. And well, I mean, I did it myself because I care about it mostly.
That's really what I was trying to say, is you saw the reality of the situation and that it needed to be talked about and no one was doing it. And so you did it. And there's a passion there and the drive that as long as there was a need for it to be discussed, you were going to do it. I don't know. I think that's pretty remarkable, personally. It's just the book really pulls it together, your perspective, and you're very deep in and versed in it all. It's amazing. Anything else you want to tell us about the book? Anything coming up where we can find you?
Yeah, please follow me on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube. I'm just at Taylor Lorenz.
Amazing. Thanks for being here and for sharing so much. And thanks everyone for listening. This has been your New Life Blend. I'm Shoshana Hecht, reminding you as ever to be gentle with yourself.